If you look at all of the work that we do in helping people as do-it-yourself investors do it better, in almost every fork in the road that we come to, we have to make a decision. And in that decision, there is typically a way that is more and another that is less risky. And I think that understanding that journey of building a financial portfolio, that if we could just focus on the defensive, that we would have the highest probability of long-term success. For example, something so simple as starting to invest at an earlier age. That has a lot of defense in it, because you might possibly pick up one extra double. And with that one extra double in your life, I'm talking about the value of the portfolio, that one extra double may be the extra money that you need to defend against something you hadn't thought about. When we pick mutual funds with lower expenses, defense. When we invest in a way that the taxes are lower, defense. When we diversify so that we don't depend not only on one company, not only on one industry, not only on large companies in that one industry, but large and small and value and growth. When we do that, it's all about defense. And the way that we save is about defense. Your dollar cost average, that is defense. Defending against the things that your heart wants to do because you feel is something either extra risky or is going to be extra profitable. In either case, dollar cost averaging protects you by forcing you to buy more when the market is low and buying less when the market is high. So I have a list of 25 defensive steps. And the defensive step I'm going to talk about today, for many people, is going to be the most important defensive step you've ever taken. Because I want to talk about a way of taking money out of your investments in retirement, a set of conditions that should minimize the possibility or probability of you running out of money before you run out of life, and to maximize the portfolio to get the most that you can take out while you are alive, and to maximize what you leave to others. And these are not any more complex decisions. They may be hard, but they're not complex. For example, saving more can be hard, but the idea of saving more and putting more to work each year, we have one table that shows by just going up 3% every year in your contributions, that is defending you against inflation, and there's likely to be a lot of it in your financial future. But today, it's about distributions. Now, I've got a lot of tables of numbers. I've also done a video piece on flexible distributions where we have a PowerPoint and where I recommend that people download that PowerPoint so that they can look more easily at the numbers. Because this is all about numbers. And those numbers lead to different amounts of money available to you in retirement, different amounts of money available to those who survive you. And what I want to have you remember as we dig into this last major part on actually accumulating and then taking the distribution, living off the money that you built over a lifetime. This kind of takes you to the end of your life, if you will. But here's what I want you to be sure and have done before you get to this part, if you can. First of all, I would like you to print out the tables that will be noted in the notes for this podcast. I'd also like to believe that you listen to the earlier boot camp series recordings, and even better yet, watch them as videos. I think that they probably are easier to go through with the video and have the tables right there. But what you would learn in that earlier part of the series is you would not only learn the importance of having as much equity as you possibly can in your portfolio, it's got to be prudent, but also what equity mutual funds or ETFs should you own, and then how do you arrange them? How do you build a portfolio that maximizes the return and minimizes the risk? And then, of course, we got into the whole area of putting money to work with these portfolios in a presentation that was devoted to starting with $83.33 a month of 54 years ago and putting money into these different equity strategies so that you can compare, at least looking backwards, that's all we've got, looking backwards 54 years to see what would have happened if you had all S&P 500, or if you had the 10 fund ultimate buy and hold strategy, or the 4 fund worldwide, or the all value worldwide portfolio, or, as I've mentioned, along with the S&P 500 in these presentations, a strategy of half small cap value and half S&P 500. Just to kind of let you compare not only the risk, but the return as it might apply to you in the accumulation period, and now we're into the distribution period. And by the way, by the time we get into the distribution period, we probably want fixed income in our portfolio. Now, we learned some hard lessons in the last segment of the boot camp series, and that was on the fixed distributions. And so I want to go back and see what the weakness is in the fixed distribution. I think the biggest weakness is this. Those people who are using a fixed distribution are typically those people who have an absolute need for a certain amount of money to come out of their portfolio. And they need that to be adjusted for inflation. Now, let's just assume for the sake of discussion, they had 10 times as much money as they needed, but only needed a little bit compared to the 10 times the value that they have. For example, somebody whose cost of living that they have to take out of the portfolio is $40,000. Well, the person who has $1 million doesn't have much room for any big mistakes, because if you're not careful, that $40,000 plus inflation could force you to run out of money or make some gigantic changes in your lifestyle. That's one of the things we looked at when we looked at the fixed distribution. But you see, if you had 10 times as much money as you need and your basic cost of living was $40,000, well, $40,000 certainly isn't very much of the millions that you might have, but it does mean you don't have to worry about inflation. If all you take out is $40,000 and you have $10 million, well, certainly inflation should not be a big problem for you. But it isn't normally people have $1 million or they have $10 million, although that does happen. But it's more about if you have $1 million and you have a need for $40,000 and a need to adjust for inflation because you're taking out just enough to live on. But how much would it take to have in your portfolio that you really wouldn't have to worry about inflation. In fact, if your need was for $40,000 and you had $2 million to take as your portfolio, well, now all of a sudden, you only need about 2%, but wait a minute. You know, life is short. I'm 80. Believe me, it's short. And you want to enjoy it. And so, obviously, if you had a cost of living of $40,000 and you had $2 million, well, 4%, which is a safe withdrawal rate, according to the experts, would mean you could take out $80,000. And you would have $80,000 to enjoy. Wouldn't have to worry about inflation. Could do things with your money that you might not otherwise do if you were living just within a close budget where that $40,000 was wanting to make sure it could be increased each year with inflation. And some years the market goes down and all of a sudden that increase is difficult because you're starting to eat into the principal. But when you have $2 million, you not only have the ability to take out $80,000, you really have the ability, theoretically, to take out 5%, but 5% of 2 million is 100,000. So you can legitimately take out the 100,000 instead of the 40,000, and you can legitimately not be worried about inflation. Now, that doesn't mean you don't want to defend against major bear markets. Knowing that a bear market in stocks can go down 50 to 80%. That's not unheard of. You know, people think that what happened from 1929 to 1938 was something that's never going to happen again. Well, from what it's worth, 1970 to 1979 was worse on an inflation-adjusted basis. As a matter of fact, so was 2000 through 2009, worse than what happened in 1929 to 1938. So I really believe that we have some expectation that the worst of things can happen. And fortunately for most investors over my lifetime, it's been the best of things have happened. But if you have more than enough, you have this amazing luxury to have a very high confidence that you don't have to have any sleepless nights about money, unless you're just the kind of person that has sleepless nights, can worry about anything. But when you have twice what you really need, that's fantastic. Now, when you have 1.25 times what you really need, I'm not quite as secure in that. At 1.5 times, in other words, if you had 1.5 million and you needed to, in essence, produce at a minimum the 4% of 1 million, but now you got 1.5 million, if you take out 5%, you're going to take out 75,000. And if you have 60% of your money in fixed income or 50 or 40, you probably have some pretty good protection there because of the fixed income. Defense again, by the way. So you have defense from having the bonds, you have defense from having the low-cost index funds, you have defense by having oversaved. Now, by the way, sometimes it's not about oversaving. It is about just being plain lucky. Like starting investing in 1970, when the market was terrible. Great, you love low prices when you're just getting started. It's the best thing that could happen. But then after a few rocky years, from 1975 to 1999, that 25-year period, the S&P 500 compounds at over 17 and small cap value over 22. Luck. And as I've talked about before, since 2000, it hadn't been that good. The S&P 500 has compounded at closer to 7, not 17. But that's the unknown we all have to deal with. But if we find ourselves in retirement with too much money, we now have some interesting choices. You can take a little more risk. Maybe you could have 10% more equity in your portfolio because you have more than you need. Maybe you could pick a slightly more aggressive equity portion in your portfolio. So in this discussion, I'm going to take out two different equity portfolios. One is going to be the S&P 500. It's the standard. You can have a whole bunch of different investments, and at the end of the day, they look very much like the S&P 500, like the total market index, like most of the large cap blend funds. Of course, I don't want you in actively managed, expensive funds. And by the way, a lot of people have forgotten that those actively managed funds lose about 1% more a year because of taxes than the index funds. That's above and beyond the difference in just your expense ratio. So there's all these moving parts, and the moving parts I want to use here, I want to take a look at the 60-40 because it has the defense of fixed income. And then I want to address the people who believe the best defense you have is to be in equities because they make so much more than everything else. And I want to show you, as I'm looking for your peace of mind, because this decision is not just about how do I make the most money and leave the most to my kids and have the most to spend. How do I sleep well? And I think you'll find some of these numbers very interesting. So remember where these numbers come from. We had the fine-tuning tables. Well, first we showed you the different portfolios, nine different portfolios under the sound investing discussion, that camp, boot camp discussion. I think it was the third in the series. But then you're going to move to the fine-tuning, where we used all nine of those different equity strategies, those portfolios, in conjunction with short and intermediate-term government bonds. And that way we could look in 10% increments. What would be the risk and the return of these different equity portfolios along with this very low-risk bond portfolio? There to stabilize the portfolio, not to give you great returns. Great returns do come from stocks historically, but to stabilize when the stock market decides to take a dive. Now, it is true that a couple of years ago, interest rates went up, our government portfolio went down about 9%. And while nobody was happy with that loss of 9%, I can tell you that was a lot better than losing about 20% in the S&P 500. So, and by the way, that was the worst year for bonds in the last 100. But we got to see it, unfortunately. Going on with this discussion here about that portfolio, the 60-40 will try to make the case that there is a place in the portfolio for defense. The 100% equity is absolutely right if you have the power, the emotional strength to stay the course in good times. Well, that's not hard. And bad, that is hard. Then that is an interesting thing, an interesting decision to make. And I have lots of friends who have done that. I, on the other hand, my wife and I, we are 50-50 stocks and bonds. And I'm 80 and she's younger, but not by a lot. Okay, what do we know? I'm going to look, and by the way, I'm going to, in the note field, I'm going to have a link to tables B1 and B9, fine-tuning tables, which you will then be able to see the returns that were used in building these tables. And I'm going to show you table H2A, the sound investing portfolios, where we show you the risk and return of all those combinations, equity only. But now, I want to remind you for a second what we talked about in the fixed distribution tables that we went through, again, using the same fine-tuning tables. The first table I want to take a brief look at is D1.4. This was the fixed distribution using the S&P 500, all equity to all bonds in 10% increments. And what we found was that everything, taking out 40,000 or 4% of the original million, upping the ante every year, the distribution by inflation, total distributions for this 54-year period, 8.8 million. Everything made it to the bottom of the page. The S&P 500 by itself, 10,800,000. The 60/40, 9,300,000 approximately. So interestingly enough, whether you were all equity or 60/40, you ended up, you took out the same amount. They both took out 8.8 million, and your heirs walked away with about the same amount in from their inheritances. Now, let's just look at one thing that's important, or understand one thing that's important. The all equity portfolio in 1975 got down to $718,000, while the 60/40 got down to $906,000. You didn't know what was going to happen from there. As a matter of fact, it felt like you were going to go broke. And you kept taking money out because that's the strategy you were using. Now, would you keep taking the money out at the same rate? No, you would probably adjust your lifestyle. But given the assumptions, this is what happened. But let's say you hung on. You didn't panic. Your spouse was fully understanding that it was normal to be down $300,000 from your original million. And then, as you held on, by 1999, it was up to $6.4 million. Then at the end of the next decade, because it was a bad decade for the S&P 500, you were down to $3.7 million, but then it came back, and you, at the end of 54 years, now you may say nobody lives 54 years in retirement. That isn't true. A lot of people will live 54 years. They are members of what we call the FIRE movement. They're trying to retire literally in their 30s, 40s, very latest, if they can. So that was taken out, 40,000. Then there was a disaster. The disaster was when we took out 50,000 instead of 40,000. That was a disaster because by 1999, you were out of money in every one of those columns, whether you were 60/40 or 100% this or that, it didn't matter. There was no place to hide because that $50,000 was just too much to take out. Plus, you had no idea when you set that up that it was there was going to be that kind of inflation. Now, if you had, the big if, I have said at least 10,000 times, there is no risk in the past. I know, looking backwards, that a portfolio that the equity, instead of being all S&P 500, was half in S&P 500 and half in small cap value, that at the end of that period of time, I would, in the case of the bottom line of the all equity, and you had to get down to almost $600,000, okay? In 1975, this was not like it was going to be good to you immediately or show you a sign that at the end of the 54 years, you would have taken out that same $8.8 million and you'd be left with $154 million instead of 10. And the 60/40 would be left with $53 million instead of 9. Because you chose a different portfolio. Now, I'm not saying you're going to be comfortable with half your money in small cap value, but I am. Now, I don't have all my money in equities, so that helps. But I will tell you that when I look at that sound investing portfolio page, that H2A table, and I look at the risk of the S&P 500 versus the 50-50, I'm very comfortable with the 50-50. That is not to say that you should be, but there are, again, other ways. Remember the way you can defend against something that's a little more aggressive? Put more fixed income in there. So then this brings us to the flexible distribution. Now, for the sake of this discussion, I am not going to assume you have 2 million or 1.5 million or 10 million. I'm just going to ask a question. What would have happened to that portfolio, its value, and its distributions if over that 54 years, instead of taking out 40,000 or 50,000 or 60,000, by the way, I know if I take out 50 or 60,000 with the S&P 500, I grow broke. So maybe it's easiest to first look just at the S&P 500, because it appears from looking at the previous pages that they have the biggest uphill battle. They have the inability to deal with the 5%. So I looked at the S&P 500. I looked at it, and this is table F1.4. And I looked at it all in equities, and I looked at it in 40-60, 50-50, and 60-40. Now, I only want to look at the 60-40 and the all equity. And what I want to find out is this. If instead of taking 4% and adjusting for inflation, what would have happened if I started out with a million and simply took out 4% of whatever the end balance was of the previous year or the start of the year? So as I see the 60-40 that I started with in the million with $1 million investment, my first year, I take out 40,000. By the way, all of these distributions were taken out at the beginning of the year. I do see that at the end of the 10 years, I have a value of 1.3 million approximately in the 60-40. I have a balance of 1.2 million approximately in the 100% S&P 500. Whoa, the lower risk portfolio did better. Why did it do better? Because there were bonds to soften the blow when the market went south. So I also see that over this entire period of time, I took total distributions, and this is 54 years, with the 60-40 of 12,500,000 approximately. Using the S&P 500, I took out 16 million. Now, both of those numbers are bigger numbers than with the fixed distribution. And the good news is you got these tables to look at. You can look at them for hours if you really find it of interest. I have looked at them for dozens of hours, trying to find what are the lessons, what can people learn from these tables. That's the good news. Everything goes to the bottom of the page. All the bottom line numbers are bigger than what you had with the fixed distribution. But you still had to go through a very difficult time back in that period of 1975. You didn't go down to 600,000, but you went down to over 700,000 with the 100% equity and about 900,000 with the 60-40. So it did not protect you against all risk. But the defensive thing you did, and you are to be rewarded. We hold your arm up as the winner. because you are the one that were willing to take a cut in pay when the market went down, because you were taking 4% of each balance. And if the market went down in a particular year, you would take that cut in pay. Now, if I go one more page with this S&P 500, I go to the page that before, when you used the fixed distribution, every column was out of money by 1999. But you use the defensive strategy of living off a percentage rather than some base with an inflation adjustment. And remember, you can afford to do that because you have more than this million. But let's just look at the impact on a million. The S&P 500, because you took out more, you would not be surprised to find out that your final number at the bottom of the page is less, and it is. It's about 14,500,000. But you made it to the bottom of the page. Wait a minute. You were out of money in 1999, before. Here, because you were willing to live on flexible distributions, at the end of 1999, under the S&P 500, 100% equity, it's $10 million. And by the time you go through this whole period, you will have taken out $13.8 million and left about $15 million to heirs, if you use the 60-40 strategy. In 1999, you'd have $6.7 million. You would have taken out, by the way, for the whole period, $10.8 million, and you would leave about $7.9 million. So in this case, the all equity was the big winner, because the all equity is the big winner if you can figure out a way to live through the difficult times. And that difficult, that way to live through it is by taking flexible distributions. Now, I want to remember those two numbers just for fun for the S&P 500, all equity. You ended with $25 million in the 4% original $40,000 starting point, and you ended up with about $15 million. So we have, again, about 26 and 15. All right, now let's look at the same S&P 500 and ask it to pay out a 6% variable distribution. And it makes it all the way to the bottom. And if you go out that first 30 years, where before you were, well, I'm sorry, with the 6% distribution, you were all broke by 1989. But in 1989, both the 60-40 and the S&P 500 all equity were at about $2.5 million. And they all made it to the bottom of the page. There wasn't a whole lot left over for the heirs, but there was some. $8 million in the case of the 100% equity, and about $4.5 million for the 60-40. So now, the other choice you have is what you're going to use to expose you to equities. And if you use the two fund, and by the way, we have tables for like these for every flexible and fixed distribution, 3, 4, 5, and 6, with all nine of the different portfolios, and we also have, soon up on the site, we'll have the 70-30, 70% U.S., 30% international. Now, as we look at the two fund, half S&P 500, half small cap value, and we look at the 60-40 and the 100% equity, they all go to the bottom of the page. I'm looking at the 5% page right now. And let me give you the number. The number for the all equity at the bottom of the page, $34.5 million. And remember, on the 5% page here for the S&P 500, that number was about 15 million. So that's good. When I look at the 60% equity, 40% fixed income, that leaves you with about 13.6 million. That's favorable. And at the end of the that 30-year period where you were broke before, now you have 60-40, you have about 8.7 million. And for the S&P 500, you have about 15.1 million. That's the S&P 500 and small cap value, excuse me. So huge advantage having selected a different combination of equity asset classes. And if we even go to the 6% distribution on a flexible basis, at the bottom line with the all equity, 19.5 million, and for the 60-40, 7.7 million. Again, much higher than you would have gotten with just the S&P 500. Now you've really been aggressive. You've taken out 6% instead of 5 or 4. You've gone to a more aggressive portfolio. But remember, if you look at that Sound Investing H2A table, you'll see that the actual risk of the two-fund strategy is almost the same as the S&P 500. So that's a lot. I hope it helps. I hope it motivates you, and this is what this whole series is about. Everything I've talked about, I've used examples. My hope is you're going to become this amazing do-it-yourself investor that have considered maybe not all 9 of those portfolios, because 2 of those are all small cap value. One of those all S&P 500. But whether it's the ultimate buy and hold, which under normal circumstances is a fair amount of work to maintain, but you'll get virtually, at least historically, the same return with 2 U.S. funds and 2 internationals. Or you could look at the all U.S. 4-fund strategy. All of these strategies, by the way, produce better returns than the S&P 500. And it wasn't because these were equity asset classes that have been good just recently. These are equity asset classes, particularly in the case of the all U.S., that have been time-tested for 96 years. And I'm hoping that you will be willing to take a look at evaluating your risk tolerance, your need for return, the time you have. And finally, you'll also think, what could I tell my kids about all this information? What could I do to make sure that when I am gone, and their mother is gone, or their father is gone, that they will take this information and make it valuable in their lives? That's my goal, is that we will get to the whole family eventually. And that is going to be up to you, probably not up to me. Anyway, that's what this particular strategy is about. I see it as the final step in defense. Now, I'm sure I'll find one more. Well, I do have, by the way, I do have a final step in defense, and it will come in a piece that Chris and Daryl and I will do in the coming weeks. I think one thing you can do that I think is a huge defensive step to take, and that is to do something very special for a newborn child, for a grandchild, for your child, or even if your child is in their teens or in their 20s, take some steps to take the pressure off of you having to leave them a lot of money and being concerned. In fact, I can tell you this. If you, and I'll go into great depth on this strategy, if you could just put away $365 a year, you would, over the next 21 years, you would set it up so that, or you could set it up, by the way, with the market having returns that are similar to the past, okay? I'm not asking for a miracle in asking that, but maybe we'll find out it would be a miracle to recreate the past. And I'm talking about including the depression and all. If you would just put away $365 a year for 21 years for that newborn child, I will show you how you will have a legitimate shot of leaving somewhere between a $500,000 and $1 million a year payoff for those children when they reach retirement. And you shouldn't have to worry about anything else financially for them except maybe their education. But I doubt that you'll miss that dollar a day for the first, it could be 10 years, it could be 20 years, but for every year you do it, it should leave them about $1 million in their retirement for however many years you do that. I'll be talking about that. So I would call that a reduction of risk if you did something now that that could replace you leaving them tons of money later. I look forward to discussing that with you. Thanks, as always, for listening. I know that fewer make it to the end than start. I appreciate that. We do want questions. When you, there are two ways you can ask questions. One is you can go to the video on this topic, and you can leave a question in the comments. Or you can email me, paul@paulmerriman.com. I'm not looking to be your investment advisor. It's not legal. I sometimes give people a little nudge. But when you send me your question, will you please include your phone number? Because so often, in order for me to give a decent answer, I need to ask a couple of questions. I may use your question on this page. That we'll have a special page just for flexible distributions, and we'll accumulate questions there so other people can see the kinds of things that have been asked about this strategy. But I promise you, nobody will ever know it was you, because I will change everything. You will probably have a sex change. You'll have more or less children than you might mention in your email. You'll be in a whole different industry. I promise nobody will know who it is. So there you go. Thanks again. And by the way, we got a very nice contribution this last week, or actually about 10 days ago, I think now, that was sent anonymously. Thank you very much. If you're listening, I want to thank all of you, whether it's there are people who leave $5 a month, there are people who leave $50 a month, there are people who just make a single donation. But I promise you that, one, it will not go into my pocket, it will not go into Chris or Dell's pocket. It will be used to continue to do the work that we do in helping others. So thank you all for all that you do to help. And of course, if you think that somebody that doesn't know about our work would be interested in this piece, I would suggest you're probably starting them at the wrong point in our work. I would encourage them to listen to the whole series. I know that's a lot to ask. Maybe by the time we're done with this series, it's 8 hours of audio, and maybe even a little more of the video. But this is a chance to take a class, if you want to look at it like that, and hopefully get your questions answered if they're kind of generic questions, and get you and keep you on the right path. And my hope is for all of you that when I am no longer able to do this, that there are others actually way more qualified than I who will be around to give you some guidance. Good luck to you, and thanks again.